Welcome to the Forward with Purpose podcast. Your hosts are Linda Keener Thomas from the National Memorial for the Unborn and Mindy Lefeshore from An Even Place Virtual Abortion Healing Groups and Coaching for Pro-Life Ministry Workers. We understand the power of addressing the abortion wound, which then allows us to confidently stand in the gap for the next person. We also understand how lonely and heavy this work can be. This podcast is designed to connect you with other leaders doing this work, to learn from the vast wealth of knowledge and experience that is out there. God has designed you for greater things. God has commissioned you to a precious and sacred place in abortion recovery ministry work. It is our hope you are encouraged and equipped as you move forward with purpose in your ministry. Welcome to Forward with Purpose. Today, I have Latoya Matthews with us. Linda can't be with us, so it's just me. But I have Latoya Matthews. She wrote a book called Unveiled Freedom, and she has a ministry, and I'm going to give her all kinds of room and latitude to talk about herself and her ministry. But first, Latoya, I'd love for you to share just a little bit about your story and tell us, you know, just kind of how you got here.
Yes, and thank you so much for having me, Mindy. And it is such an honor and a blessing to be here. And so I am where I am right now because at the age of 18, I had graduated high school, and I knew that some things were changing in my body, but I didn't know exactly what was happening. And my grandmother's friend, you know, the elders can always tell when someone is carrying or conceiving or anything like that. And she saw me in a grocery store one day and she said, "You're glowing.
No.
You're pregnant." And I was like, "No, not me." Not me. And I had a cousin who also, she was like, "You're sleeping a whole lot." And I didn't really know the symptoms that came with this being an 18-year-old. And I was just like, okay, maybe I do need to go get this checked out since people are, you know, saying things. So I walked into the health department. I'm originally from Mississippi and we have health departments. And so I walked into the health department and the nurse told me to, you know, follow the procedures. And so that's what I did. And she came back in the room and she said, "You're pregnant." Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I was taken aback. I was like, what? Like, you know, but it's like, what would you expect? You're doing the duties, like you're doing the thing. So, you know, it wasn't really a shock, but it was a shock for me because I knew that at that time I had just graduated high school and I had opportunities that were out there for me. And in my mind, it was just like, I can't do this because I'm already trying to leave Mississippi. I knew that it wasn't the place that I would be in. I was already in my mind applying for opportunities to go to the Navy. I had applied and I had gotten my height waiver, you know, and everything because I'm 4'11 and a half. And so you have to be a certain height to join the military. And, you know, I had taken all the steps and I was like, Mississippi is not the place for me. And so I remember calling my boyfriend at the time and telling him that I was pregnant. And there wasn't much words on the other side of that line. It was just like complete silence. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And also, I didn't even know if I was going to be with him at that time. And so I had never even heard of the word abortion at that time. And I just knew that when people had babies, they had babies. You know, and so for me, it was like to be presented with that opportunity. I was like, well, this is the decision that I will have to make because I have all of these things that are happening for me and on my behalf. And I felt like at the time that I really didn't have a great relationship with my mom. And at the time, I also told myself, I'm not going to be that girl that's on welfare. Like I had seen family members that were on welfare and I was like, that will not be me. And so I told my boyfriend, I was like, well, this is what we're going to do. And he didn't hesitate. You know, he was just like, well, are you sure? Like, and I'm like, yes, this is what I want to do. And so I scheduled the appointment and I remember walking into that building and I had my head held low because there were people outside. They had signs. They were, saying things, but I blocked all of that out. And it was almost like the walk of shame going into that building. I just remember sitting in that chair, filling out the paperwork, and I didn't even look at the other women that were in the room. Like, I didn't look around. I didn't want to see anything. I just was focused on filling out my information and getting in and getting out of that place. And
And
so,
you know what? Isn't that what we have to do to have an abortion? I mean, we have to disconnect ourselves from what's really happening, don't we?
Yes, we do. And so they called my name, and I go into the room, and I remember laying on the table that they had prepped for me, and I was laying there, I was looking at the ceiling, and I begin to hear the machine, the whirring of the vacuum going off, and just laying there. And I don't even remember any of the conversation that I had with the nurse or even with the doctor. Like you said, that there was just such a disconnect. Like, I just needed to not focus on what was happening. But I remember looking around that room, and I saw the jars on the wall. And I just remember thinking, my baby is going to be in one of those jars. And they were done, and I went to the recovery room. And it was, dimly lit in the recovery room. And it felt like I was there forever. And then she came in. And after, I went school shopping because I was preparing to go to college. And I got in that truck with my boyfriend, and there was nothing said. There was no conversation, nothing. We drove to the store, got the things for me to move into my dorm room, and I went back home. And I remember walking into my aunt's house, and I went to the back bedroom. And I guess the business of that day had worn off. And I sat on the bed, and I just broke down crying. And I said, "Lord, what did I just do?" And my boyfriend must have been feeling the weight of it at the time as well, because he came back to pick me up. And I just remember him crying. And I got in the truck, and we went to a secluded place. And I just sat in his lap and put my head in his chest, and I just sobbed. And we both, were just crying. And so I started college 2003, August 2003. And 2006, I moved to Georgia. And even during that transition time, I really didn't even think about it. Like, I was just still moving about like nothing had taken place. I was always busy trying to make sure that I didn't have time to sit and think about that.
And
But in the process,
that is such a good way for us to not think about what's happening in our head and heart and to just keep ourselves disconnected from it. So it's not just disconnecting in the abortion center, but we have to then maintain that disconnect from reality afterwards until finally it comes crashing in.
And so, I was drinking, I was partying, I had went to school for tennis, and so tennis season came, so that was another occupying, time, for me, not having to think about that. But I was just in this place and in this space of, it was just so much happening, and I was making sure that I was always busy, doing something. I had gotten a job as well. And so, still, when I got out of class, I would go to work. So, there's still no time to really sit and think about, this, because by the time I get back to school, then it's time, to go to bed and wake back up and go through all the things. But one of the things, I wouldn't say that I'm blessed, but one of the things that I did not experience that I know most women do, there was never a sensitivity to babies crying. There was never any nightmares of what had happened in that room. And so I never experienced those things. And it could be because of the constant motion that I was in.
So you didn't have any kind of triggers at all, like babies or
No.
when you had your you have a daughter, correct?
Yes, I do have a daughter.
When you had your daughter, that didn't trigger you back?
Yeah, it did.
Okay, so it wasn't until then.
It wasn't until then, not until I had my daughter, that things started to really hit me. When I found out, I moved to Georgia in 2006, and my grandmother, she was my rock. She was like my everything. And in 2006, when I moved, the very first thing that she said, because my mom, no one knew that I had had the abortion.
Okay.
And there was only one person that knew outside of my boyfriend, and it was she was my friend at the time, and she knew, but then she broke that trust by telling someone else. So I put up this wall, and so I kept everyone out, and still no one in my family knew about what I had done. So in 2006, when I was prepared to move out to college, my grandmother told me, "Don't go to Georgia and get pregnant." And what did I do? I moved in May and I was pregnant in October. And it was just like the very thing that she told me not to do, I did. But in that moment, I knew the hell that I had went through, and I was like, I'm not going through that again. I will have to do what I have to do, and I'm gonna have the baby this time, because I knew the torment and the things that I was experiencing in my mind at that time. But it was every day that I
Isn't that interesting? Because I hear you, and I get this from my experience. Because I hear you say you were so busy, you were never thinking about it, never triggered by anything, all these things, but yet you went through hell and torment in your mind.
Yes.
So it was
Yeah.
like this. It's there, but you're
But
just trying to buffer it, and so you don't feel it, you don't experience it. You know, it doesn't become the reality that is true. And
yeah.
yeah, so it is a strange.
It is a strange thing to be in, and it, but every day from the moment that I had it for about 10 years, I prayed every day for God to forgive me for what I had done. And so I got pregnant in 2006, and I remember being at work one day, and I told my friend, and I broke down in front of her, and I said, "How can I take care of one when I've given up another?" And so things started to really hit me when I became pregnant with my daughter. And it was like the enemy, you know, bringing up these things and, you know, telling me all of these things. And she was born in 2007. And she was about 2 weeks old. And my mother came to help me. And I would pick her up and she would start crying. But when my mother picked her up, she would stop crying. And my husband had went out of town because I have a bonus son. He went out of town to Mississippi, and it's in the heat of summer, and it's very hot in Atlanta during the summertime. And I run out to my car. The car isn't on, the windows aren't down. It's hot in this car. I know that it's hot, but in my mind, that doesn't faze me. I call him and I say, "She doesn't love me." And he was like, "What are," he's confused. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know how to console me. He doesn't, you know, have the words. He's confused because he's like, "What are we talking about?"
Did he know about it, or is this where he finds out?
Well, actually, my husband is actually the one that took me. He was my boyfriend. Yes.
Okay. All right. So you guys, so did, oh wow. So that I have some more questions. And because I want to know, did he get healing too? So go ahead.
Yes. So I call him and he's like, "What do you mean she doesn't love you?" And I said, "Every time I pick her up, she starts crying. But when my mom picks her up, she stops crying." And it was like the enemy was telling me, "See, I told you that she wasn't going to love you because of the decision that you had made." But I also didn't know at the time, no one had told me or talked to me about postpartum. No one had told me that babies can pick up stress in your body when you pick them up. Like, you know, from they spent 9 months with you, so they know the functioning of your body. But I didn't know that. In my mind, it was, "She doesn't love you because of your decision." And so it all came rushing in, and I was like, "Well, I can't love her because I don't have this love to give her. Like, how am I going to love her? How am I going to take care of her as a mom when I don't even have these things and I don't know?" And so I'm going to church every Sunday. I'm sitting in church, and you know, but there's still things that I'm wrestling with in those times that I'm going to church. And it wasn't until one day my pastor saw me and she said, "I see death in your eyes." And I knew that she wasn't lying because I was just like, "God, take me now. I'm tired of dealing with this. I'm tired of the torment. I was ready to leave my husband and my daughter behind. I was like, God, I can't do this anymore. Like, just take me. And so I went through some deliverance with that because it was things that I had done prior to the abortion. Shame was already in my life, but abortion just magnified it. It was like yeast to the things that I had experienced. And so I went through that, and then my pastor introduced us to the book called The True Measure of a Woman by Lisa Bevere. And she asks two questions in chapter two, and I didn't make it to the end of that book because everything like shifted for me in that moment. And the first question was, what is it that you have in your closet that you need to clean out? And I knew that it was God speaking to me, that it was time to clean out abortion. And it was also my grandmother had passed away shortly after I moved to Georgia. And so I didn't know that at the time I was dealing with depression as well. Like, it was just a lot. It was like layers on layers on layers of things that I'm dealing with that I had not healed or hadn't started the healing process of. And so we read the got to that first question, and then the second question was, what is it that you have of value that you can give to someone else? And I immediately started sobbing. I was crying, and I got frustrated and mad at God because I was like, how could you make me with no purpose? How could you make me with no value? How could you say that I have something to give when I don't? And so it was,
That was a thought from the abort, like that kind of came out of the abort.
yes.
You just felt like you had nothing to give.
Yeah, I have nothing to give. I am of no value. Why would you make me with no purpose? Why would you make me to be here when I don't even have anything to give to anybody? And so, and at that time also, I was having this pain in my stomach, almost as a reminder to what I had done. It would be this sharp pain that would hit me in my stomach. And so we got back and we talked about the book, and I didn't want to talk about it. But thank God it was a small group of women. The Lord knows he's intentional. And so we share, and I tell them about the things I had written on that page. And I told them how I had prayed every day and asked God to forgive me. And my pastor said, "Well, sweetie, he forgave you the very first time that you prayed." And I didn't know that because I didn't have a relationship with God like that. And for her to say that, it was like a gift that I didn't know that I needed, and it was the gift of forgiveness. And so when she said that, she didn't know that I was having that pain in my stomach. But when she said it, I haven't had that pain in my stomach since then, because now I understand that it was the unforgiveness that I was holding against myself. The regret and all the guilt and everything that I was holding on to from having that procedure done. And so that kind of changed the trajectory of my life and, started the healing process and really started to get me into this place of understanding what it was to know God and to understand, that He had forgiven me and that He still loved me. And so I just thank God for my pastors because they approached me with love and compassion.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, we don't heal without God. We really don't.
Yes.
The Word of God heals. It does. And even if we never did a Bible study on abortion recovery, but we were seeking the Lord for abortion, there would be healing. But boy, there's so much power in having someone take you and lead you through something like that. So did you go through a specific study for abortion recovery ever?
No.
No.
Everything. I didn't have my first support group until last year.
You mean for yourself?
Yeah, because I went through it because I was going to be a volunteer at a nonprofit. So their requirement was you had to go through a support group for it. So my healing was literally Holy Spirit.
That's
In
good.
the Bible, that was it. I didn't have anything else. And even at that time, I didn't know that there were support groups. I didn't know that these things existed until God began to speak to me to tell my story. And so everything that I've experienced has really just been God. It's been Holy Spirit. It's been Jesus, the Godhead three, and well, everything has been just
Yeah.
that.
So I want to talk a little bit about the book you wrote, and I'm going to apologize right on air to you. I've read your book. I told you that before we started, and I loved it. It's beautiful, but I read it several months ago, and I've slept since then. So I did forget the detail about your husband, and I want to apologize for that on air. But
No.
it is beautifully written, and I want you to just kind of talk about Unveiled Freedom, what your intent was for this book, for the women who read it, and go for it.
Yeah, so Unveiled Freedom, it was one of those things again where the Lord was like, you're telling the story, but I need you to lay everything out in this book. Like, I need them to really read it and and just be transparent about what took place in my life. And so Unveiled Freedom is just that. It's giving an invitation for women to really walk unashamedly and to understand that abortion is not the author of their story. And so writing this, it was the intent of also, it's not just for people who've experienced abortion, but anyone who has experienced shame in their lives, because you may not have had a physical abortion, but you've had things in your life that have tried to abort your destiny, whether it be the addiction, whether it be divorce, whether it be the accident. There's always something in our lives that are trying to abort us from getting to the destiny of what God has called us to.
Yes.
And so it's for anyone who has really dealt with shame. And I talk about in the book that I didn't even know shame was the word for how I was feeling. I knew that I had emotions, but I didn't know that it was shame that I was dealing with. And so I talk about in the book, the Genesis chapter one, and the Genesis is all about going back to the beginning. Shame did not first start with the abortion. It started with me being humiliated in school after having sexual intercourse with a guy and him telling the entire school. That's where the origin of shame came from, but abortion just magnified that.
Right.
All the unhealed areas in my life. And I talk about also how the shame that I carried from my husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, and he was also with someone else at the time that we were talking. He was with her first, they had a son, and we started, talking, and we had intercourse, and how he has also received healing as well, and how the Lord began to work on his heart, and how he apologized to me by saying, I'm sorry for the trauma I caused in your life, that I added onto it, and how the Lord really had him to see how he was an accomplice in this, because his thing was, well, I didn't do it. I don't have anything to apologize for. She was the one that went through it. And how the Lord dealt with his heart, and he had to ask for forgiveness, for that. And so I talk about from being a mother to my relationships with friends and being married, and how I'm not able to give my body to my husband to love when because I didn't love my body. And just going through and talking about how speaking with my daughter at the age of 12 and telling her about the abortion, and her having the wisdom of God at 12 years old to say, thank you for choosing me. And I didn't know that I needed to hear that from her own lips, but it was like the Lord used her to further break off some things that I had been holding on to.
One of the things I do like about your book, Latoya, is that you actually give the reader some things to think about at each chapter. And so just talk about that a little bit. That's the part where it's called unveiling, the unveiling.
Yeah. So the unveiling is where I ask these questions at, like the Genesis, the unveiling of that. Where did this thing start in your life? Where did shame start? Because when we can get to the root of something, we can stop going through the revolving door of repeated cycles and repeated patterns. And so my whole idea behind that was to have you to sit and to reflect, because just like me, having to take a moment to just sit and face that thing instead of running from it, because you keep running, but it's still chasing after you.
And you talk about in the beginning, you talk about the veil, because you're, it's unveiled freedom. And
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought about this before, but you talked about the veil that the bride wears, and then you compared
Yes.
the veil that we wear as shame. So go ahead and tell us.
Yes. So I wanted to paint that picture because we all seen a veil, a bride come down the aisle and with that veil on, which you can't really tell if she's crying, if she's smiling. You can see glimpses, but you don't fully get to see the rawness of what she's going through walking down that aisle. And the same thing, shame, guilt, regret, all of those things become a veil to where we hide behind. We don't really show people exactly what we're going through. And that veil becomes a barrier between us and God, keeping us away from the true love, keeping us away from that unconditional love, keeping us away from the healing that we really desire to have. It becomes a barrier, and it's all based on 2 Corinthians 3:18, where he says, "With we all with unveiling faces, like we're going through this transformation, but it's only when we begin to remove the veil." Moses had a veil to keep the people from seeing the fading glory that was happening when he would come down from the mountain. And so Paul was encouraging us to remove the veil because it's only when the veil is removed that we get to experience the fullness of what God has to offer us through his son, Jesus Christ. And so when we remove that veil of shame, we get to experience that because the veil happened in Genesis 3 when the serpent, told Eve, did God really say that? And they ate the fruit, and it said they became naked and ashamed.
Yes.
And we begin to cover ourselves with those fig leaves when God is like, who told you that you were naked? Like, why do we have to clothe ourselves? Why do we have to hide our insecurities, our shame, our shamefulness, our guilt and regret, when there are safe places that provide us to where we can come and remove the veil so that our hearts can be touched, so that our souls can be, met with such love and grace and compassion and the things that we really need to fully be who God created us to be.
Yeah.
And so we try to paint this picture of perfect. And so that people don't really get to see or hear about the things that we've experienced. But the Bible tells us that we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the words of our testimony.
Yeah, and it's that testimony of what Jesus has done in our life is what we overcome. Because just to tell our stories flat out is not glorifying at all. But when we talk about what Jesus done in our life, that's a completely different ballgame because we're not.
Yes.
That we are who we were, we are who he says we are, and we
Yes.
him, and that's all that matters. So yeah, it's beautiful, really beautiful. So you do some, you work with women, correct? Doing abortion.
Yes.
So just talk about that a little bit. Tell us what you do.
Yes. So 2018, the Lord was like, I need you to tell your story. And so I hit a Moses and I said, find somebody else to do it because who's talking about this? And especially, I didn't see people who looked like me that was telling this story. The first time I had ever heard of someone speaking about this was after watching October Baby and hearing Sharon Rigby tell her story on what's his name? Gosh, what's his name? It's a Christian TV show. I think he's from Louisiana.
I'm not
And
sure.
I can't think of his name right now, but you would know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
But she was speaking on his show. I think his name is James. I'm not gonna butcher it. Okay, I'm just gonna leave it at that. But she was talking to him and how she had that when she got cast for that role, they didn't know that she had had an abortion.
Oh.
But the end of that scene where she's on the floor, she's saying that that was a real moment. That was a healing moment for her because her husband didn't even know that she had had one. But after shooting that video, I searched it up and I was able to find a clips. His last name is Robinson. Robin, Robison, James Robinson.
Not the Duck Dynasty people.
No, it's he's an older gentleman. He's older gentleman, white hair. But he has a Cajun accent. But I'm watching her interview with him, and I was like, that was the first time I had ever heard of someone speak about this out loud. And so God is like, tell the story. I'm still like, I don't want to do this. Like, this is crazy. But the voice of the Lord kept getting louder. And I finally gave in and started sharing my story. And it was on podcast interviews that I was doing it. And women started reaching out to me and saying, I want you to help me. And that was the first time I had ever felt value. That was the first time I had ever looked at it where it was like, no matter how oxymoron it sound, it was like God used abortion to birth purpose in me. So having those women to say, I want you to help me. And I'm like, I don't know how to help, you know? But my coach at the time, she was like, you got life experience. How did you get from here to here? This is how you help them, by taking them through the process of what got you to here. And so I've had the honor of working with women from the Netherlands, Belgium, New Zealand. I've had, worked with women from across the US. And you just hearing the testimonies, because I didn't know that they offered pills at the time. I only knew about the vacuum procedure. But hearing these women say, I was sitting on that floor and it took me 2 to 3 days to really get it out, of them, and how they didn't think that they could have children after their procedures. And so I've had two women I know for sure. They have reached out to me, and one, she had a beautiful baby girl, and she was like, it's because of you that I'm able to really do this. And I had another one who lives out of the country. She has two beautiful baby girls now, and it's just to see and understanding, letting them know that abortion did not abort the promises that God has for you. And so just being able to help them, even in at a time where, again, I didn't think that I had value, but the Lord was like, I would take the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. Let me show you how I'm going to use this to bring me glory. And so that's where I am right now, is helping women understand that just like me, you may have prayed, however many times that you prayed, but God said he forgave you the very first time that you prayed. He threw it into the sea of forgetfulness, and everything that we experience now, helping them understand shame, regret, and guilt is not a cross that we have to bear. Yes, there are crosses that we have to bear, but those are not crosses that we are meant to carry. Jesus took that upon, the cross 2,000 years ago. And to still carry that is to do a disservice of what he did on Calvary. And so helping them to understand that they are still daughters of the King, that God still wants to use them for a purpose. So dismantling the lies of the enemy that I, had to deal with, helping them to understand that God still wants you, God still loves you, he still has a purpose and a plan for you. This is what Jesus did for you, and you don't have to deal with that.
Right. So you're doing this by virtual, or are they coming to see you?
I do virtual, but I do host retreats. I do have retreats, and I am in the process right now. We have started a nonprofit called Heal the Womb, and so we are getting things together so that we can help individuals as well as families to disrupt the cycles of trauma that surrounds reproductive loss, and sending out care boxes to women so that they can start the healing journey, and providing them with the support that they need. And so, just being a shoulder, for them. And I always say, one of the things that I like to say, I know where I stand when it comes to abortion, but when it comes to the women of God and his daughters, I'm pro you. What does your soul need right now? Is it the tough love? Is it the compassion that you need right now? The very thing that I received. So I'm pro you. I care about your soul. I don't care about the pro-life, pro-choice, because it's one of those things that I feel like it divides us when we are meant to help one another and still come together, as one. And so again, I know where I stand, but I care about the souls of his daughters.
That's beautiful. So healing the womb is not available for us to go and look at yet right now.
You can go to the site. We're still building, but you can go to the site. It is up and available for you to look at, and you can fill out the form to get a care box. And you can also, we have the option where you can send a care box to someone. And so it's free of charge. And we just, just want to be the hands and feet of Jesus to, start this journey.
Yeah, what kind of things are you putting in that care box?
So the care box will have a journal, and we will have devotionals as well as non-faith-based, because we want it open, to all. So we'll have faith-based as well as secular things in there. We will have some comfy socks, to make sure that you're comfortable. We'll have candles, and we'll have stress relief balls, to help you in what I like to call, I got this from the Reproductive Grief Institute, and it is little breathing cards that teaches you how to breathe through that, which I think I sent you one. I think it may have been in your book.
It may have. I don't know where it is off the top of my head.
But it's a little breath work card to teach you how to breathe, especially when you're feeling anxious. And so I always include those, even with my book, when people buy them from me, I include that, just so that they can find comfort whenever they may be triggered, and they can, have that to take those deep breaths. So those are some of the things that are included in that care box.
Okay, and that's healingthewomb.com or .org.
.org, healthewomb.org.
Heal the womb, not healing. Okay, gotcha.
Healthewomb.org.
All right, well, I'm gonna put that in the show notes for sure. So if anybody wants to check that out, they have that option and that resource. I mean, it's a great resource to have, right? So Latoya Matthews, I'm so thankful you gave us your time today and shared your story, shared about your book, shared what you're doing, and I'm excited. I'm excited for what God is doing. He really is raising up an army, and that to me is beautiful.
Amen. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to share.